This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. Here's your HeartWise host, Dr. James Markham.
Want to welcome everyone to HeartWise today. We're going to talk about a very serious subject that much needs to be talked about, and that's the subject of suicide. The statistics show that worldwide about 1 million people a year commit suicide. And from the data I looked at, it's the 13th leading cause of death worldwide and the leading cause of death among people under the age of 35. Men more than women commit suicide, but 10 to 20 million but women's attempts of suicide are higher than men. So it's something that we definitely have to talk about and get a feel for, because we got to address it. With us today is Dr. Tim Jennings. He's one of the nation's leading psychiatrists and also a Christian psychiatrist. He's author of a best-selling book, Could It Be This Simple, which is available on Amazon.com. His website is comeandreason.com, and he's a ministry partner with HeartWise Ministries, as we let people know that the brain and the relationship with God, that relationship is the key to health. It gives us the power to make lifestyle changes and live better. It gives us the power to know when to use acute care medicine. But unfortunately, since suicide is such a leading cause of death today, we need to talk about, you know, the prevalence, the cause, the risk factors. Dr. Jennings, welcome to HeartWise. And let's a little bit, what's your take on, you know, this numbers going up and the prevalence? And are these statistics that I got from the internet correct?
Yeah, I think the statistics you received were quite reasonable and
accurate. They're scary, though.
Yeah, they are scary, and you can even break those stats down even farther if you want. Contributing factors, I think, is something you want to talk about, both in a general sense and whether there are things happening in society that could be increasing the pressure towards suicide. The contributing factors are a mental illness, particularly depression.
Right.
When somebody's depressed, the neural circuits of the brain are changed in such a way that the reasoning, people don't reason as well because that part of the brain is suppressed. The sense of dread and gloom and the part of the brain that gives you a conviction of wrongdoing is hyperactive. Mm-hmm. And so you get the sense that nothing is right and ever will be right. And the part of the brain where you experience pleasure is suppressed. There's no joy. And the part of the brain where you feel emotional connection with people that you love is suppressed. You feel disconnected and isolated. So you can understand why people with depression are at higher risk for suicide, because their brain is depression actually alters the circuits of the brain in such a way where they feel a sense of oppression, a sense of disconnection, no pleasure, no joy, a dread and apprehension, and they can't think real clear.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So depression is a major risk factor, and then alcohol and drugs are a major risk factor, both because alcohol and drugs can increase depression, but they also decrease prefrontal cortex function, so we become more disinhibited, more impulsive, more likely to act out on negative emotions.
Right. So the prefrontal cortex, that's our thinking part of the brain, right? The reasoning?
Right behind the forehead, exactly correct.
Okay. And when people drink alcohol or have depression, that part doesn't work as well.
That's correct.
So the wrong part takes over.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. And so when what leads people, and I've given you the big factors, which are depression and then certain alcohol and drugs. But the general thing that lead people, almost everyone to suicide that begins considering it, will find this going on. They will find themselves in a circumstance in which they experience some type of pain or suffering, whether it's physical or emotional, for which they lose hope of relief. They feel as if it will never end. They feel trapped in it. They don't see any other way. They won't get out of it. So they're under an oppression of pain or suffering of some kind, and suicide becomes their escape. And this is almost always a factor in suicide.
Wow. Now, you know, there are some people out there that might have some of these risk factors. Some of our audience might be depressed out there. Some of them might have some of these other risk factors, like they might be taking illicit drugs. And unfortunately, more and more people take these. I also see the same thing happens with people on chronic pain medications. You know, the opioids, they also have higher, you know, suicide rates. How do you approach this? You know, I know in your practice, you know, I'm sure you get called in the hospital. I usually see them when they're on the ventilators, you know, because they've overdosed with the medication, making their heart go fast. But sooner or later, you have to get at the cause. How do you approach an individual who might be calling out for help?
Well, in my practice, of course, I do assess the suicidality of the person, their risk. And in my experience, there are very, very few over the years who truly want to die.
Right.
They find themselves suicidal sometimes, and even to the point that they don't believe they can be safe with themselves. But they would, if I gave them a choice and I said, I have two buttons on the wall. One you can push and you will die. The other you push and you will actually be well. Your pain will be gone. You'll be happy. Your depression will be gone. Your financial crisis will be gone. Your girlfriend will be back with you. Whatever the circumstance is that's causing their pain will be immediately relieved and they'll be happy. Which button do they push? In my experience, it's almost everyone has always chosen the button that relieves their pain. There have been a few that really just wanted to die, but they're very, very rare. Most people want the suffering and pain to stop. They want relief.
Yeah.
And so what you can do is you can offer hope. And this is key to dealing with somebody who has suicidal thoughts or suicidal urges. You empathize with their pain. You say, I know you're hurting. I know this is tough. I know this is hard. But I want to tell you, this is treatable. This isn't going to last. We can get you well. You're going to stop hurting one day. You work with me. This is going to go away. But I can't promise it's going to go away today, but it's going to go away.
Right. I want to help your brain. I want to help the good part of the brain start working better and turn off this bad part of the brain.
Exactly. And I'm going to tell you, when I get that and I get people to engage with me, then the suicide risk immediately drops. As long as people still have significant hope of relief, then their risk of suicide actions will significantly decrease.
Yeah, I like that word hope, Tim, and it's so important. But what surprises me is, we talk about a lot of things in healthcare, okay? But when you talk about a million deaths a year, and a rising rate, and we know that people's brains aren't working as good, more and more people are taking drugs and that, the rate's only going to go up. You would think it would be more in our vocabulary of how to help people and reach out to them. That's what we're trying to do today. We want to reach out to people that might be needing help, that might be feeling poor. Where's the first place to start if you might think you need help?
Yeah, I want to tell people, I'll mention that, if you are having thoughts of suicide, that there's a national hotline you can call from anywhere in the country hooked up to a suicide crisis counselor in the local area where you're at. And this 1-800 number, it's 1-800-273-TALK, 8255 in the United States, 1-800-273-8255. It's a suicide helpline. So if you're having some concerns while you're listening to the show, pick the phone up and call. There'll be somebody there to talk with you.
Good, 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 because that is so important. Now, a lot of times when people are feeling depressed and down, I know, a natural thought is to think, I just want to end the pain. And there's different types of people that commit suicide. You've heard of altruistic suicide. We've turned euthanasia, when people are under a lot of pain and suffering and they just want to end the pain. And I'm not talking about that.
Right.
I'm talking about people that feel discouraged. They don't feel like their life's worth living. They don't want to go on. And I think that the spiritual part of this component is also very important, especially as it relates to hope.
Well, there's no question about it. We mentioned this idea of pain, the idea of suffering. One of the things that will contribute is when you're in pain and suffering without purpose.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody is suffering with a purpose and they understand the reason for their suffering and it serves a purpose that they're willing to endure oftentimes. You can think of, for instance, soldiers in times of war who could go through very difficult torture even and suffering, but they can endure it because they understand the higher purpose that they may be saving their buddies or comrades who are in danger by their so forth. So suffering with purpose does not bring hopelessness. So it's the loss of focus or purpose. Also, when we feel isolated, abandoned, disconnected, or alone. Those types of experiences will heighten suicide risk, whereas if we feel connected, valued, appreciated, and again, purpose, this will diminish the risk of suicide. And our society, I think, is contributing to increased risk because our society is breaking down social networks.
Yeah.
But many people, even those who claim to believe in God, are disconnecting from the church relationships mm-hmm. and friends and community that they used to connect to. They're isolating from family. They don't have the friendships they used to have. They end up staying at home and watching TV.
Right.
They stay at home and play virtual video games. They don't have real relationships anymore. And what happens is they end up depressed, isolated, and they don't know anyone who can help. And their car breaks down, and they're all by themselves. They get overwhelmed with finances or something else. And in the past, they might have a community they could reach out that would encourage, get them back on their feet, and they don't know who to call.
Right. And that's a key word, relationship. We're talking here with Dr. Tim Jennings. We're talking about a very serious subject, and that's suicide. Dr. Jennings has written a book, Could It Be This Simple? It's available on Amazon.com. After our break, since this is a leading cause of young people, we're going to talk to things about parents and loved ones can do in screening and might be preventing this type of problem that might lead to suicide. So stay with us on HeartWise. We're going to be back after this short break.
Sick?
How can I get off my medications?
How do I get better?
How can I have ultimate healing?
The Ultimate Prescription by Dr. James L. Markham answers these questions and introduces the reader to the ultimate prescription for our lives. This book is available at your local bookstore or online at Amazon.com.
I'd like to take a moment to invite you to visit the HeartWise Ministries team on the internet. Stop by heartwiseministries.org and discover for yourself that optimum health is not the result of favorable genes or the right combination of pharmaceuticals. No, optimum health is the result of making the right choices each and every moment of each and every day. If you're like me, you're probably a little confused about what the media and marketing moguls are feeding us. There are a lot of potions, pills, and promises out there. Some work, some don't, and some are downright dangerous. Whom do you believe? Whom do you trust? Board-certified cardiologist Dr. James Markham, founder-director of HeartWise Ministries, says there is a source of information that can be trusted and followed. That's the Bible, God's owner's manual, as he calls it, for us all. The information you find on heartwiseministries.org is information backed by biblical truth. It can be trusted because God can be trusted. So stop by, won't you? That's heartwiseministries.org.
I'm Dr. James Markham, and I talk to patients every day who want to know the truth in healthcare. On our website, heartwiseministries.org, you can have your questions answered. You can read my blog where I talk about interesting and controversial subjects in medicine. You might choose to go to the radio or television sections and learn more about all sorts of health topics. Take the time and go to heartwiseministries.org.
Welcome back to HeartWise. I'm Dr. James Markham. We're talking about a very serious subject today on HeartWise, and that's the subject of suicide. 1 million people a year commit suicide in the world today, and it's also a leading cause of death among those under 35. You know, we talk a lot about heart attacks, a lot about cancer, a lot about weight loss. Well, today I wanted to talk about suicide and ways we can prevent that. We're here with Dr. Tim Jennings, a Christian psychiatrist who's just been elected president-elect of the Tennessee Associations of Psychiatrists. We want to congratulate him on that. He's an author of Could It Be This Simple, a wonderful book, and his website's comeandreason.com, and he's a ministry partner with HeartWise Ministries. And Dr. Jennings, you know, there might be parents out there, especially of teenagers and young adults, and you talked last segment about social isolation, and I can see how this is happening. You know, you get your websites and people texting and not talking and, you know, going to the rooms and doing video games and all this, and you can create isolation. What are some simple tips that parents and loved ones might be used to sort of screen a little bit if their loved ones might be getting a little bit of trouble?
Well, first thing would be to talk to them. Okay. Seriously, talk to them and ask them.
Not text them, huh?
Text them, exactly. So some people feel like they shouldn't ask the question, are you having suicidal thoughts? That might not be a good idea. But no, it's very appropriate. People will actually feel relieved that somebody cared enough to ask the question.
But you know, I have a 15-year-old, you know, and I go into her room at night, and you know, she doesn't want to be with her dad. How would you sort of, what question would you use to break the ice? Okay?
If you're thinking that we're specifically talking about the issue of suicide today.
Right.
Okay. So if you're actually got that concern on your mind, and it's not just you're trying to bond with your daughter, okay, then you could ask her, say, hey, has life ever been so tough? Have you ever felt so overwhelmed that you actually thought maybe it would be better not to be alive?
Right, okay.
Okay, that's a gentle way to ask the question. And if they say, if they look at you like you're crazy, no, I've never, yeah, oh, no, are you kidding? No.
Good shape.
But if they go, well, Can you tell me about that?
Okay.
See? So, yeah, you can ask this question without having to use the suicide word.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that would recommend that if you have that question in your mind, then ask the child the question. One of the protective things, though, that does reduce the risk is if the child has a close confidant in the home.
Okay.
In other words, a parent that has developed a relationship, usually a parent for which the child really feels comfortable coming home and talking about things. You know, they made fun of me today at school and laughed at my haircut. You know, I had this girl and I went to ask her out and she said no, and all of her girlfriends have been making fun of me all week. Yeah. You know, if she has somebody to talk about these stressors with of life,
yeah,
it really reduces risk and makes them feel valued at home. So parents that spend time with their kids, develop a relationship where the kids feel safe in having conversation rather than always simply being scrutinized.
Yeah,
and sometimes that adolescent relationship can feel like you're just constantly putting out fires.
Yeah, well, we've heard so much in the news about this word bullying, and you know, and they have so much of it, they don't know where to go. And we've heard several cases in the news about people that bully that they just, you know, they commit suicide. It's just sad.
Yeah, and that does absolutely happen. I would suggest the majority of suicides are not due to bullying, even though bullying can be a factor in suicide. There are other factors involved. I think in late adolescence, meaning like 17 to 20, 22, 24, one of the biggest factors in that age range is the breakup of a relationship.
Okay.
When a boyfriend, girlfriend leaves you for somebody else, that type of situation, that can lead to an impulsive suicidal act that if you get them through that first 24, 72 hours or so, usually they get them past it a little bit, that then they can grieve the loss and they won't act to harm themselves. But sometimes there can be an impulsive act at the acute phase of a relationship breakup. And a population that we didn't mention that is at very highest, one of the highest risks, is the military young late adolescent military person between 18 and 24 years of age. Because as you can understand, being in the military, being away from home, you've lost your supports, you're under huge high stress, you might be exposed to actual combat, you might have loved ones lost, your own life might be threatened, you often will have exposure to alcohol, and then there can be relationship breakups that happen. And so the military population has one of the highest rates of suicide amongst any population because of the age group and because of the nature of the stressors that they're under. And the military works very, very hard in trying to identify and put in factors to protect them and reduce the suicide risk. When I was the Division Psychiatrist of the 3rd Infantry Division many years ago, we took this very, very seriously, and we're constantly doing assessments on cohesion and morale within the unit and how commanders can work to assess and identify risk at-risk soldiers and get them the help they need.
Yeah, and that's what we're doing today. We want to give everyone an awareness, let people know who's at risk, and the key words, you know, hope, relationship. Dr. Jennings, how do we give people hope?
Well, I think first thing they have to know is that they have value.
Okay.
As being a human being, they have value. They have value as a human being. They have a value as a child of God. Now, some people are harder to give hope to because they have developed an orientation, a belief system, a construct that shuts certain avenues down. I have patients who deny there is a God. Okay, and there is no hope for the future. And they might have had a loved one die in a car wreck, and they have no hope of ever seeing them again because they've developed a belief system that shuts down hope for them. So, you know, and you certainly don't attack those beliefs in the face of someone's crisis either.
Right.
Okay. But you and I might recognize that that would be a higher hurdle for that person. And so the hope that we would be, not the hope that they might see the loved one again in that patient, it would be the hope that they would be able to find new meaning and new love in their life in the future and heal from this loss.
Yeah. Now, we talked earlier, you know, a lot of the different psychiatric conditions lead to that. You know, we talked about depression. We talked about, I don't know if we mentioned bipolar, but bipolar is another one.
Sure.
When a patient comes into your office, you know, and they're depressed, do you immediately grade how depressed they are to see if they might be one of those that are in danger? Because, you know, sometimes, you know, when they come in the emergency room, you know, with a suicide attempt, you know, first you want a psychiatrist to come in to make sure it's safe for them to go home. How do you determine who is safe to go home?
Yeah, it is standard practice amongst mental health professionals on all initial evaluations, regardless of why they present, to assess suicide risk. Mm-hmm. And so it's a routine part of my practice to assess suicide risk on everybody who comes to my office for the first time and evaluate, hey, are you having suicidal thoughts? Do you have suicidal, feelings or desires? And then when you assess that, then you assess the level of seriousness. And you'll look at things that, yes, I felt sometimes I'm so miserable, I just wish I could go to sleep and never wake up.
Yeah.
Have you thought about how you might do it? Well, no, I've never thought about that. Do I need to worry about, have you planned out how, or do I need to worry about you taking action? Oh, no, I would never do it. I just wish sometimes God would take me in my sleep. Well, that person clearly is unhappy, would like to leave this world, but they're not at real risk at hurting themselves.
Yeah.
Okay? Somebody else, yes, I've thought how I do it, but I have two kids, and I could never do that to my children. It would destroy them. And so as long as my children are here, I'm not going to hurt myself. And, well, how long have you been having these thoughts? Well, 35 years. Okay? Yeah. Well, that risk isn't very high.
Right.
Okay.
But how do you get people to be honest with you? You know, in this world where everyone wants to think, you know, isolate themselves, you know, you hear stories about, you know, if I was going to really want to do it, I wouldn't tell you the truth.
Well, that's the reality.
How would you get through to them?
You don't, because the reality is somebody who really wants to do it won't come to my office.
Correct. Right.
Okay. They're in my office because they want help. They don't really want to do it.
Right.
And so on some level, the reality is somebody who really wants to end their life cannot be stopped.
Right.
Nobody can stop them. If that's their true intention.
And I guess the only people that can really reach them, the most common ones, are the ones you talked about, the ones that have relationships with them and can sort of see this. And that's the people we want to sort of target today. We want to look at each other, develop relationships, care for each other.
I want to say something to the people in our listening audience who have lost a family member to suicide. Because many of my patients have lost family members to suicide. And sometimes they will struggle with feelings of guilt. Why didn't I notice? What could I have done? And I'm going to suggest to you that, to tell you, in fact, that the suicide that happened in your family was not your fault. You didn't kill your loved
right.
one. And if just ask this straight up question. If you would have known, would you have done something about it? And you know the answer is yes.
Yes.
The only reason you didn't act is because you were unaware. So don't punish yourself for information that you did not have.
That's right. And that's so important, because a lot of people carry a lot of guilt, and this guilt damages the brain. This brain creates stress. This damages the heart and other body organs. You know, a way back, Tim, you said that the brain controls the body, and as a heart doctor, you sort of get offended. You know, you don't want to think, but there's so much truth to that. And we have to start thinking of the way we think, the way we look at God, the way we do things. These are so important to our society, and these relationships, giving people hope, letting them know in Matthew, come unto me, worship me, and I will give you this rest that you need, this hope that you need. Really, if you think about it, hope comes from God.
Yeah, and I wanted to, in closing, mention that there was a study published in the Journal of America, the American Journal of Psychiatry, the Green Journal, that people who have a healthy religious belief system, it's protective to suicide. Those who don't have a belief in God are more likely at higher risk, actually have higher rates and higher risk of suicide than those who have a healthy belief in God.
Wow, scientific evidence. And if there's someone out there right there, right now, I want to just bow our heads and we're going to have a short prayer. Father in heaven, If there's might be some listener out there that wants to connect with you or wants to come into relationship with you, Father, please be with that person and help them seek the relationships and hope that they so need, is our humble prayer. Amen. And we want to thank Dr. Tim Jennings for being with us today discussing this topic of suicide. His website is comeandreason.com. His book is Could It Be This Simple? It's on amazon.com. If you have any questions, we want to invite you to our website. That's heartwiseministries.org. We want to thank you, wishing you the best health. Also wishing you to have a lot of hope in that relationship with the Savior that makes love and all things possible.
Thank you for joining us today on HeartWise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. HeartWise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.